Kia ora and welcome to Amarin's Podcast, episode 187. Today is Thursday, November 19, 2009. Now you're probably thinking to yourself, what is he doing recording on a Thursday? He's got a live show the next day. Well, that's true. However, I am making a few changes in the way I post shows and that sort of thing. And also because the comments and so on are beginning to pile up a bit, and if I didn't do a studio recording this week, then it was going to be another week and it was going to pile up more, so now I just decided I'm going to go ahead and do it. Now, the truth is I actually started recording this yesterday and just couldn't get through it. And that actually touches on why I haven't been able to record until today. I came down with a particularly nasty attack of gout this week. Yes, that's two in about a month's time. Both of them have their start because of work stress. I just got, I had a hell of a lot to do and just got overstressed. And, I mean, that's just a fact. Stress is one of my major triggers. And actually, the triggers for a gout attack boil down to three general categories. What you eat, physical injury, or stress. And my trigger has always been stress, except this time was a little bit different. After a work week that was especially hellacious, which is why the posting of Too Political and the live chat were both exceptionally late that week, after that week, late even for me, I had what I call niggles, pains, and so I was taking ibuprofen to deal with it, which is the right thing to do, but I wasn't resting and elevating my foot and all that as I probably should have been doing. And then at the end of the week, on Friday night, Nigel and I had takeaways, and we had Indian takeaways, and I absolutely gorged myself on onion bhaji. Now, if you aren't familiar with Indian food, onion bhaji is onion, which is dipped in a batter and fried, and it is yummy. But the batter is made out of chickpea flour. Chickpeas are a pulse, like lentils or beans and so on, and are particularly bad for gout. Now, under normal circumstances, I probably could have gotten away with it, but I was already feeling a little bit of twinges in my joint. And then on Saturday, we had Don and Darren, fellow American expats from Wellington, over for dinner. And we had a nice thick steak, and I had a bit more wine than I should have. So you add that all up, the massive amount of chickpea flour battered things on Friday, the thick steak and the wine on Saturday, and I was cruising for a bruising, and I got it. I got hit hard. It started Sunday. It got worse as the day went on. By Sunday night, I was in absolute agony. And finally, I ended up taking Panadine to relieve the pain. Panadine is Panadol with codeine in it, which, by the way, you can get at any pharmacy in New Zealand without a prescription. You just go in and ask for it. There's also a version called Nurofen Plus, which is ibuprofen with codeine, although not as much as in the Panadine. And the active ingredient in Panadol is paracetamol, which in the U.S. is called acetaminophen. And that did ease the pain, and I was finally able to go to sleep. And I actually blogged about a little bit of this because Jake was sort of my nurse during this time. Kind of cute, really. And so I finally got to sleep, barely. Monday, I napped off and on during the day, and I was in a lot of pain during the day. And on Monday night, I went to bed about 6 just to lay down for a while, fell asleep, and didn't wake up again until about 12 hours later, the following morning. And Tuesday, I actually felt a little bit better. But by afternoon, I was starting to feel bad again, and I ended up going to bed early again on Tuesday night. Yesterday, I felt actually okay pretty much when I first got, not okay, I felt better when I got up. But as the day went on, it got worse and worse and worse, and I again lay down in the evening. I didn't go to sleep this time. I listened to podcasts on my iPod, but I was feeling really bad. And so I took some more Panadine, and I finally went to sleep. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I thought to myself, I'm not feeling any pain. This is really weird. And by this morning, pretty much the worst of it is gone, suddenly. Now, these attacks can hit suddenly, and they can also disappear suddenly as well. One of the things that's different in the, say, 24 hours in between is that I was drinking a lot of water to sort of flush out my system, and I think that's part of what really helped. Plus, which it's probably getting to the end of its cycle or whatever. Now, the area around the joint is still quite red, but when it was at its worst, it looked like my foot was badly sunburned, is how red it was. And now it doesn't look quite that bad. It's looking a bit better, although my foot is still swollen. But there is no way to convey how bad that pain is to somebody who hasn't had it. It can be absolutely excruciating. And it's not just in the joint. It can be. I mean, it's been described as like having broken glass in your joints. And that's true. But it isn't always actually, doesn't feel like it's in the joint, but in the muscle tissue around it, because it's inflammation which is causing the pain. And there, when it's a particularly bad attack, it's a pain that suddenly sears you through your entire body. It starts near where the inflammation is, and it just shoots through your entire body all at once, suddenly. And there, it sort of pulses, but there's no particular rhyme or reason to the pulse. It's not like it's on a, you know, it doesn't follow your heartbeat or anything. It just sort of appears out of nowhere. You'll be just lying there quietly, and all of a sudden the searing pain shoots through your entire body. It's very difficult to convey how severe the pain can be in a bad attack, but it can be absolutely unbearable when it happens, so much so that you start thinking that you maybe should start looking for an axe to cut your foot off. Okay, maybe not, but it is really bad. In fact, the pain is so bad that I suspect it would make even Big Fatty screaming out his safe word. It's that bad. But anyway, that hopefully now is on the wane. And one of the characteristics of a gout attack is it often makes you kind of disinterested in everything else going on around you. And that was certainly the case this week. I haven't been able to do much of anything, either because of the pain or just because I didn't feel up to it. And fortunately, poor Nigel was able to take up the slack. I mean, I'm a bad patient under the best of circumstances, but when it's the sort of pain and I'm unable to do anything anyway, it's particularly bad. But he was able to pick up the slack, which is, of course, always good. And, of course, that's the point, you know, for better and worse and sickness and in health and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, it does seem to be on the wane, and so I'm hoping to get back to normal now. Now, I mentioned briefly at the start about how I'm changing the posting of my podcasts. And what I meant by that is really the live show. I recorded on a Friday, New Zealand time, Thursday, North American time, and I'm going to start posting it the next day. And the main reason for that actually has nothing to do with the show. It just has to do with it giving me a little bit more time to edit when I need to edit. And so there will be a day in between the posting of this episode and the posting of the live episode. Also, on the subject of the live episode, there will be no episode next week because Thursday in North America, that's when I record it, Thursday is Thanksgiving Day in the United States. And I know there are a lot of people who can't be bothered listening, and I don't want to, I mean, I shouldn't say can't be bothered, they've got other things to do. And I also don't want to impose on panelists or anything. So we're going to take that week off. And then, of course, I'll be back the following week, which is December 3rd, North American time. So there will be a live podcast tomorrow, and then there will be none the following week, and we'll be back on December 3rd. So that's the schedule. Now, today, all I really want to do is to go over these comments and so on that have piled up. And I'm going to first start by going back to episode 183, which was the live chat called What Agenda? And most of the comments I already went over previously, but since then I've had one from Turniphead, who said, I really wish I could have been part of this discussion. That damn job career of mine getting in the way again. However, I really did enjoy listening to the show a lot. Well, thank you, Turniphead. He says, the solution to the marriage issue is super simple. It is almost staring us right in the face, so blatant that one could almost go so far as to say, we can't see the forest through the trees. The solution? From this day forward, every couple that wishes to join together in a union, as it were, albeit man and woman and woman, or man and man, must be done by a government official, or as in a justice of the peace. Said justice of the peace does not have the right to discriminate against anyone that wishes to enter into such a union. Should any couple be religious, they could then go forward and have a ceremony that would satisfy the religious needs, what needs, wants, and desires, but not without first proceeding with the procedure above. A religious ceremony would not be legally binding as a union, whereas the proceedings with a government representative would be. This then doesn't take marriage away from the heterosexual couples that fear so much that I had sex with a man last night and destroyed their marriage. It puts everyone on a level playing field and then allows anyone their personal religious freedom to commit their vows as they see fit. Of course, all marriages that have been performed in the past would be honored as such. This would just be the turning point to moving forward. Sounds simple enough, doesn't it? Oh, and the other, and one other question for those in the discussion last night, and I do know you do speak for the others when you said, willing to wait another 20 years for things to happen? Really? And I replied in writing, and I said, I've always thought that the solution was for the state to take back marriage from religion. As for waiting 20 years, it's a healthy dose of realism, a description, not a prescription. I don't know anyone who doesn't want it all right now. However, we're also all aware that the American political system is set up to move at a glacial pace. So progress, in quote marks, such as it is, takes decades rather than years, and certainly not months or weeks. That's the reality. The challenge is to find ways to speed up that process without creating a backlash that slows down progress even more. The ones who succeed are the ones who have their eyes on the prize, taking victories or even small gains where possible as stepping stones to the larger goals. So, speaking for myself, I'm sick of waiting for politicians to do the right thing, but I'm keenly aware that that's the way the American system works. And unfortunately, it is. It just moves too slowly. But it's the way it is. And the next comment was on episode 184, Expativersary, which was actually my last studio episode. And it's from Roger Green, who said, Happy Arthur in New Zealand anniversary. Yes, you should do a piece on New Zealand religion, bigotry, and bigotry in that arena. And Roger, I will be doing that, but more in a second. He goes on, speaking of bigotry from the Onion, if God had wanted me to be accepting of gays, he would have given me the warmth and compassion to do so. And he provides a link. I do want to go into the subject of religion in New Zealand in a bit more detail further on, but I will say this. I have mentioned that the march that's being held by those folks who want to reinstate the right to smack children. And it's taking place this Saturday. And of course, Nigel and I have been doing rain dances, hoping that it's the worst rainstorm that Auckland's ever had on them. With our luck, it'll probably be the sunniest day ever. Anyway, they've started running ads, you know, using a $500,000 campaign. They've run ads on websites, and I've seen a billboard and running TV commercials. Now, the print ads, if you will, whether it's billboards or websites or whatever, are pretty bland and generic. But the one on TV is really horrible because it carries on that non-existent link between the election of John Key and his conservative government and the adoption of the referendum. I've said before on this podcast, I've said it on my blog, and I'll keep saying it until I'm blue in the face, there is absolutely no correlation between the election of John Key and his conservative government and the passage of the referendum. They're completely irrelevant to each other. The election of John Key had as much to do with the fact that after a certain number of years, Kiwis just want to change their government as it did with any sort of right-wing impulse on the voters. They're trying to draw a link where none exists. It cannot be said strongly and often enough. There is no link between the election of John Key and the passage of that referendum, and it is absolutely stupid to claim that there is. But I will talk about religion in general in a future episode. And now we're going on to Amron's 185, live chat, What Now? And the first comment was from Brother Snatus, who said, during last night's show, the question of what could be done to develop support for our issues was offered. At the time, I could not think of anything. However, this morning I was reminded of one group that seems to be doing a lot of things in Colorado. It's the Gill Foundation, and he provides a link, and its giving arm, the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, and there's a link for that too. These organizations were founded by Tim Gill, who was the founder of Quark, which is a desktop publishing program, for those who don't know, and was once the leader in desktop publishing. The founder of Quark, after Colorado's sojourn into the wilderness after Amendment 2. While their focus is to support the gay and lesbian community, they like to support other organizations that might make life better for all Coloradans. Is that how you say it? Coloradoans? Coloradans? Whatever. Somebody can let me know. they give money to several art groups in the state, Do opera companies count as non-gay organizations? Good question. Anyway, the donations put the Gay and Lesbian Foundation on the group's materials, etc., which links gays and lesbians to the arts. Similarly, they have picked public broadcasting as a focus. Again, this puts the name of the organization out there a couple of times a day. This also encourages the media outlets to cover other issues. The people who enjoy the arts and public media have a slight tendency to be on the liberal side, which might not be the people we are trying to reach, but it does put gays and lesbians out there. Now comes the "we must build support these types of groups." This is the problem. Others are always the answer, but I think we must each come up with an answer how we can help. Very true. And I replied in writing to that one, and I said, "Thank you so much for commenting. The first one to comment after a live podcast and before the recorded version was posted. A milestone." And I should say what I mean by that is that every week before the day before the live show, ideally, I post the topic for the next live show so that, you know, people can decide if they want to be part of the panel or not, and so on. And then when I actually post the episode, I just take that post and turn it into the show notes. And Brother Sinaitis had actually posted that before I posted the recorded version. So that's what I'm referring to, that he was commenting on the live show after the live show was done, but before the recorded version was up. And that was the first time that had happened. And anyway, I went on. "Seriously, I agree with you that we must each come up with how we can help. There's something for all of us, no matter how deeply closeted the purchasing decisions, for example. The Gill Foundation is interesting stuff, particularly because it's targeted. Gill is also targeting campaign donations to candidates who can defeat anti-gay politicians. In other words, it gives money where it can do the most good. There really is something everyone can do." And that's actually an important point to remember, because there are always targeted races where it's possible to knock off an anti-gay incumbent. You can give money to the opponent. There are always organizations, state, local, national even, that can use money. Those of us who have limited means can easily pick one of those that is particularly in need or particularly useful or what have you, and give our money where it'll matter the most. But it doesn't have to be money. It can be time, if we can do that. There can be all sorts of things. But I think those are very good points. And thank you, Brother Sinaitis. And moving on, next was Matthew, who I believe is Spanking B. Arthur. Matthew, isn't it? Yes, it is, from Spanking B. Arthur. And he says, "If we get everything but marriage, it's the same as saying, you're still different. We may have the same views, but they are still better. How many times will it take before we get that separate but equal does not work? The heterosexual world drums into our head as kids that we will grow up and fall in love and get married. They read us books about it, make us watch movies about it, TV shows about it. They teach us from birth that it is our birthright. And then we fall in love with someone of the same sex and they take it back. Well, F that." Actually, it is permitted to swear on my site. But anyway, but F that. "I say it's time to take away some of their rights," in quote marks. "They think that we'll destroy marriage? Fine, let's restrict and redefine marriage for the purpose they state, having kids. I want fertility tests and a timeline, and they better be able to afford them. And no divorce until the woman hits menopause and then marriage dissolved. And Boxer isn't going anywhere, she's well-liked." Thank you, Matthew. Yes, I certainly didn't mean to imply that Barbara Boxer was in any danger when we were talking about that race, just that it was more that it was a funny example of how the extreme right of the Republican Party is fighting with the ordinary right of the Republican Party now. That was all. I actually don't think that that woman is much of a threat to Barbara Boxer. But as for the rest of it, Matthew, I completely agree with you. Particularly in the case of the U.S., the word marriage is important because it automatically conveys something like 1,000 or more rights and privileges just by the word. And those rights and privileges are instantly transferable state to state to state. If somebody gets an everything but marriage civil union in the state of Washington and then moves to the state of Oklahoma, they lose all of their rights instantly. They're gone. And that's true even for states that do allow marriage, like, say, Massachusetts, for instance. Somebody moves to Illinois, they lose all of their rights. So I think that the only way forward is some way which gives everyone the right to marriage. the question then becomes, well, how do you go about doing that? And I have said repeatedly that I think it needs to come out of the churches. As long as the churches have control over marriage, there's going to be this war, this cultural war, as the right wing tries to suppress the religious freedom of the center and the left. Because that's what it is, you know. The right wing is insisting that only their religious freedom counts. Their religious freedom to deny gay and lesbian people the right to marry. That's all that matters. The religious freedom of the centrists and the leftists who want to be able to perform marriages for same-sex couples is being trampled over by the right wing. So religious freedom is a one-way street. It only is valid if it's for the right wing. Now, I think that what Turnipseed was saying earlier is probably the best way to go, where the only union between two people that matters is the one performed by the state. And if people want to then go on and have a church ceremony of some sort, religious ceremony of some sort, that's their business. And churches are free to decide who they will and will not perform that ceremony for. I don't have any problem with that. I don't really care if religions discriminate, because they do anyway. But my point is that it makes no more sense for the government, to get involved in the business of determining who's really married in the religious sense than it does to determine who's really baptized. Churches, the religion, the Christian churches, the various denominations argue amongst themselves over who's really baptized now. Let them go ahead and argue about who's really married. It doesn't affect anything in the public sphere. The interest of the state is in things like inheritance, it's in related property rights, it's in spousal rights with things like visitation in hospital and in case of death, all those kinds of civil matters. And that's really what the fight is about. I don't give a damn if some religious fundamentalist doesn't recognize my relationship. It doesn't affect me in the least, but damn it, the people I pay taxes to better recognize it, or we've got a problem. And of course, here in New Zealand, we have civil unions, which are open to everyone, and marriage, which is only open to straight people. Now, one day that will change. One day marriage will be open to everyone. But our civil union is in some senses like Washington's, everything but the name. And I don't have a problem with that, because New Zealand is a unitary authority. There's only one government. So it's not like if we move from Auckland to Christchurch that we lose all our rights. No, all our rights go with us. But in the U.S., it's a completely different matter because of the 50 sovereign states, and that makes a huge difference. And the next comment was from Archer, who said, "You stole my ending. That's okay. I need to join the group shows again sometime." And you do, absolutely, Archer. You're welcome anytime you wish to join us. And what I've been doing, for those of you who haven't been listening to the live shows, is I've been stealing the endings from various podcasters, and last week was Auntie Vera Charles. And the final comment for that episode was from Edis, who said, oh, by the way, hi, Edis, haven't heard from you in a while. He says, "On my way to work, I was listening to the first 20 minutes, my commute time, of the conversation, and when I got to work, my RSS feeder showed me this research," and he has a link to it, "courtesy of Schneider's blog. Here's the interesting part," and this is a quote. "Nonetheless, the breadth of increased distrust that the public puts into practice is striking. Individuals threatened by terrorism become less trusting of others, even their own neighbors. Other studies have shown that they become less supportive of the rights of Arab and Muslim Americans. In addition, we found that such effects extend to immigrants as well, to a group entirely remote from the subject of terrorism, gay Americans. The specter of terrorist threat creates ruptures in our social fabric, some of which may be justified as necessary tactics in the fight against terrorism, and others that simply cannot." And he said, Edis goes on, "I find it very interesting, as it may explain some connections we are not aware of." And I think that's a very good point, and thank you for that, Edis, and thank you for the link as well. I think that's entirely true. Now, there were no written comments on the previous episode, episode 186, which was the most recent live episode, but I did receive an email from Alan, who says, "Thanks for your recent podcast on online relationships / friendships. May you send my regards to Brother Sinaitis." Thank you, just did. "I'm not sure about where Brother Sinaitis is from, but my relationship was in the same boat as his. I'm from Singapore, like his partner, and my partner is in the U.S., I had to quit my job back in Singapore and move to the U.S. to study and hoping to gain employment after graduation. Things didn't pan out as we planned, but somehow it became better. After I graduated from college, I was lucky to be selected for the Diversity Visa, DV, and eventually obtained permanent residency in the U.S. If Brother Sinaitis is in the U.S., I would encourage the partner to try the DV program too. Once again, thanks for your program. I always enjoy them all. Thank you, Alan. And the DV program, the Diversity Visa program, basically is a lottery that the U.S. government holds, and they assign a certain number of visas per year to various regions of the world. And the idea is to ensure that the immigrants coming to the U.S. as permanent residents are varied, so they don't all come from one part of the world, for instance. And I don't think I've mentioned this before, but many years ago, Nigel actually entered the lottery for a diversity visa. It was not successful, obviously. That was not all that long after we were together. He just thought, oh, well, we might as well try and see what happens. I don't remember if there's a fee for entering it or not, but we used an immigration attorney to file it for us, just to make sure, you know, all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed and stuff. It wasn't very expensive. I can't remember how much it was, but it wasn't much. And it ended up not amounting to anything. Now, if he had been successful and received a green card, I'm not even sure if we would have gone to the U.S. It's hard to say now. It's a long time ago. It was probably 97 or 98 or somewhere in there. And of course, now it's highly improbable that we would live in the U.S. under any circumstances. But the diversity visa program is one way that that same-sex partners who are not American can go and live in the U.S. There are very few ways that can happen, but that is one that is possible, and it is a lottery, and the chances of getting through are kind of iffy. But there's no harm in trying, and especially once you learn the rules for how to do it, so you can cut your expenses and do it directly. I mean, what have you got to lose? There's probably not much money involved, I don't think, but certainly worth trying out. And I also got an email from Steve in the UK. Okay, and I just thought this was kind of fascinating, so I thought I would pass it on. He says, I grabbed this from a UK website. Don't know about you, but I found it insulting. It's about the launch of a gay comic book, not that I read them anyway, and they say that the gay characters are not represented in comic books. I think they meant gay stereotypes. See what you think. And this is from the website. It says, a comic book featuring the world's first gay superhero team has debuted at retail level. Spandex, which is what it's called, follows the exploits of transvestite crime fighter Liberty and Wonder Woman's lesbian equivalent Diva as they team up with fellow gay heroes Prowler, Glitter, Indigo, and the twins Mr. Muscles and Butch. Each issue sees them do battle with the villains such as Muscle Mary, Pussy, and the Pink Ninjas. And this is a quote. Gay people in comics are fairly underrepresented, but this new comic aims to address that, said the series creator Martin Eden. Spandex introduces a whole bunch of fabulous new characters that are set to take the comic world by storm. It's a fun experimental comic full of drama, comedy, romance, and action, all done in the best possible taste. The first issue introduces the cast in their Brighton headquarters. Brighton is, by the way, supposedly the gayest city in the UK. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they say. Anyway, in their Brighton headquarters, its plot sees the team defending their hometown from the attack of the 50-foot lesbian and introduces their enemies, Les Girls, with a Z on the end. A 120-page graphic novel compiling the book's first volume will be released next year. Until then, a series of shorts titled Spandex Shorts will be released regularly to acquaint readers with each member of the team. And then Steve goes on, really? Mr. Muscles and Butch? Pussy? Muscle Mary? The Lay Girls? What's next? Captain Power Penis? Oh, God, I should work for them. Big Fatty Balls? Oh, wait, that's been done. You should see where he ties his cape. LOL. Well, thank you for that, Steve. And I agree with you. I actually think it's insulting. When I heard about they talk about a gay superhero and all that, what I first thought of was the comic book that Justin draws in the American version of Queer as Folk. And that is a whole nother issue, having a gay superhero who's really a gay superhero, just sort of a real person instead of these stereotypes. But I doubt that that's ever going to make it to the U.S., but I just thought I would pass that along and to show how, no matter how far we think we've come, we apparently still have a long way to go. Now, I do encourage emails and comments and phone messages. And, of course, you'll hear all the contact details at the end of this podcast. By all means, do comment in any way that makes you happy. And I will try to continue to read them on the podcast. Some of you may realize that, those of you listening to the last one, in the show notes for last week, I encouraged people to send in emails or leave phone messages if they wanted them played on that live podcast. And by all means, do the same again. I will be posting the questions for today for the tomorrow's live show later today. So, you know, stop by and see what you think. And send a message if you want. But that's it for today. I will be back tomorrow with a live podcast. And I am also about to record another two political episode with Jason. And this week, among other things, we're going to look at Sarah Palin's book. Why do I giggle every time I think about that? But hey, that's it for today. I will talk to you soon. Have a great rest of the day. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.